only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
Caught by Ingram over the defender.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
Touchdown, Giants. Jump ball, Odell Beckham Jr. Made the catch with one hand for the touchdown.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live from the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. I'm John Schmelk. He is Paul Dottino. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513. We have a show full of guests, but we will try to sprinkle in your calls throughout the show, including a couple off the top before we hear from our first guest, Rob Rang at 1210. We'll also hear from Joel Corey, former NFL agent, Jenny Ventress, who of course is with Monday Morning Quarterback, Tony Pauline, NFL draft analyst Tom Rock, Aaron Goldhammer from ESPN Cleveland, talking about the Browns to do with their first pick, and John Ledyard from NDT Scouting. Welcome to Indianapolis. We are at Radio Row, which is a little bit different this year. There's going to be fans everywhere. They've opened it up to the fans, so they're going to kind of be sprinkling around, hopefully not behind us, but they'll be in the vicinity of the program. So a little bit different. Obviously, the NFL trying to make the NFL Combine as fan-friendly as possible.
Yes.
And a lot to talk about here, Paul, and we'll start with what we kind of got information on yesterday. No events yet in terms of on-the-field performance stuff and drills, but we did get some measurements. And taking a look at some of the data and what some people are talking about, not a whole lot was a big surprise. That really seems like it's going to drag anybody up or down the boards much.
No, I didn't think there were really any headlines that came out of Indianapolis so much yesterday, other than talking about some veteran names who are going to be out of jobs. I mean, Wilkinson from the Jets, Gore from the Colts. I mean, those kinds of things seem to take more of the news away from what was going on here, because let's face it, you only had medical going on yesterday. People were doing MRIs until 10:30 last night.
Well, Paul, and that's why when we opened the show yesterday, we started by talking about this is not just about the draft class. This
right.
is about free agency as well, which, of course, comes before the draft. And it's only about, you know, a week and a half or so away now in terms of when free agency mm-hmm. begins in the National
14th.
Football League. So there's a lot of teams talking to agents of players on their teams, that which is allowed under rule, obviously, if they're going to
yes.
do things like Frank Gore, Jarvis Wilkinson, things like that. So, I mean, these are interesting. Jarvis Wilkinson, I'm sorry. Muhammad Wilkerson.
Former Giant,
yes.
Jarvis Wilkinson. Who was a nice guy, by the way.
Very nice guy. So you have some veterans being cut loose, some rumors of more franchise tags. I know we mentioned on last week's show that there were rumors going around that the Panthers would franchise Graham Gaudet. That has not happened yet. So that is still up in the air, something some people are talking about. But a lot of business being done at the NFL. It gets interesting today, though, because we're going to hear from some of the draft prospects at the podium for the first time
yes.
during this process. And two position groups that will interest Giant fans. Now, this won't happen until after our show is over, so we'll have them on the show tomorrow. But we'll hear from running backs and offensive linemen. So two big positions I know Giant fans are interested in.
Very critical positions for the Giants. We know they'd like to upgrade in both those spots. It's no secret. I mean, they've talked about those things. I think one of the things that we've seen here, John, is casual conversation. No offers, nothing that's going to break the rules in terms of tampering, but there's a lot of casual conversation of people who know people who know people who are throwing around things, which is why you hear things about potential trades with picks. You hear potential free agents who might be landing somewhere. You're hearing price tags like on Kirk Cousins. Some people think he could get $30 million. You know, from a team to go somewhere else. That's a lot of the backroom talk you're hearing as people kind of play telephone. And, you know, the old telephone game at the parties where I tell you and you tell him and he tells him. And then finally the chain goes all the way to the media and then maybe some of the players and the teams. So that's kind of a lot of stuff of what's going on here in the back rooms.
And one of the reasons we'll have Joel Corey on, a former NFL agent, he'll kind of give us an insight into how that
yes.
process works and give us a feel for that free agent market. We mentioned we'll have the offensive linemen and running backs on tomorrow's show when they speak at the podium. We'll record it. We'll get it back to you on tomorrow's show. So today we're not going to focus on those two position groups. We did a lot of offensive line and running back yesterday, Paul. Today we're going to take a longer look at some of the positions we did didn't speak about yesterday. We'll do some wide receivers, something we didn't talk a lot about. The Giants might be in the market for them in the middle rounds of this draft. And we'll go to the defensive side of the ball, something we didn't do a ton of yesterday either. Corners, safeties, linebackers, I know Giant fans are very interested in. And, of course, Dave Gettleman, history suggests that the Giants are going to draft at least one defensive lineman here. So,
in all likelihood.
These are the guys we're going to try to take a closer look at today so fans are going to get a better feel for, you know, maybe the Giants will pick a player here at the second overall pick or even at 34th overall, but maybe we'll see some guys that could be a third or a fourth round pick that could help the team right away.
One of the things that we really haven't talked a lot about as New York media who follow the New York Giants is that there's certainly a chance now that they have five picks in the first four rounds. Remember, they got an extra compensatory in the fourth. They could package something and move up into the bottom of the first round if they really like somebody.
Right.
I mean, we're all thinking that, oh, they got the second pick in the second round. Well, you know what? Maybe that pick's going to be 28 or 29 in the first round because they're going to make a move. I don't think many of us have spent much time thinking about that.
Well, we did talk to some people, Paul, and, you know, I've heard some people say there are maybe 10 to 15 true first-round players in this draft, maybe not even that many.
Right.
Other people think there's a cutoff point between 20 and 25 in terms of when the talent starts to drop off. So I think a potential of a move back into that first round, if there's a player
that you really
at a
want.
Position that the team really wants, that's something they could consider.
Hey, they moved up to the top of the first round to get Landon Collins a few years ago. Let's not forget that.
Correct. No question about it, and that's something the Giants certainly can consider now. All right, folks, we're going to have Rob Ryan in a little bit, but let's get some calls in first at 201-939-4513. Just like yesterday, rapid fire, ask your question, make your point, then we're going to move on to the next guy. So let's start with Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, you're up first on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hey, great to talk to you. I'm really learning a lot from this. It's very interesting there.
Thanks, Joe.
One thing I did learn there, it sounds like our drafting a tackle doesn't sound like, you know what I mean? It sounds like Eric Flowers is still our best bet there, that the tackles coming out ain't too much better than him the way it sounds. And one question I want to ask you, how good the draft was when we drafted Eli Manning, John. I know Paul will remember right off the bat. Do you remember who we got in the second round that year?
Well,
they traded their second round.
Made the deal to get Eli.
Correct. They didn't have their second round.
They gave up a shopping cart load of picks because, in addition to Rivers.
Correct, and it was the following year, and Joe, thanks a lot for the call. The following year, they didn't have their first-round pick, and that was the draft where they managed to get Corey Webster, Justin Tuck, and Brandon Jacobs in the second, third, and fourth rounds. Not a bad haul. Squeeze in one more call. Dave in North Carolina. Dave, you're up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's up, Dave?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi.
I'll try to make it quick since you have a guest on.
Go ahead.
You guys hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes,
Dave,
go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. Hey, I'll make it quick. One thing I wanted to bring up with all the quarterback, you know, beating it to death, trying to decipher these guys and pick holes in them, one thing that kind of irritates me is the assumption that when they get to the NFL, the coaching is just so good that some of these flaws are going to get fixed. Listen, I love Eli Manning. Josh Rosen would be lucky to have half the career as Eli Manning has had. But Eli Manning grew up in a quarterback family, around quarterbacks all of his life. And I would say Eli Manning doesn't have the best footwork, doesn't throw the best football.
Dave, what's your point?
When you make these assumptions that Darnold is going to fix these things, that Allen is going to fix these things, you know what? I like Rosen as a clean prospect. Let these other guys worry about developing and all the shouldas and wouldas and possibly. When I watch these three guys, Josh Rosen's mechanics are picture perfect. His footwork's picture perfect. You know, if he can get the mental side of the game that Eli Manning has, I think he could be a decent pro.
Mike, I'm going to make it simple for you. The problem with Rosen is the medical, okay? He's had concussions. He's had an arm situation. That's going to be the primary thing that people look at when they start questioning him. It's not going to be about what his mechanics are.
And I think also a leadership question, too. Some people wonder about that sort of
thing
as well.
The interview process.
The personality thing. And that's something that Dave Gettleman spoke about yesterday. You can't really get much out of 15 minutes here in Indianapolis, but you can get a little bit something more when they have their personal visits with the players. You get almost a full day with the guys. So that's something you'll have to take a look at later on with this entire quarterback class. It's very important to know what you have on and off the field with the guy that could be the leader of your franchise. We know the Giants had a grand slam when they found out with Eli Manning. But remember, too, every prospect has to get developed. Nobody's a finished product. Nobody's a perfect prospect. And every guy can improve on things moving forward. We'll be right back with Rob Rang. Break down this draft class on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. We'll be right back.
He's under pressure and he gets sacked.
Individual rose up.
Snap is good at kick on its way to this block. Jason Pierre-Paul, JPP.
I think when he plays with leverage, he's as powerful a defensive lineman as today. He does everything well.
Pass intercepted as he threw it right. Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown.
You play like him, and we'll go places.
It's always important to give back to the community simply because without their support, we wouldn't be the Giants. The community always supported the Giants in everything we do, and our fans are always going to be behind us, and you always have to give back because giving back one time may help that little kid be motivated, and they are the future, so we have to give back and motivate younger people to become successful and do positive things in their lives.
One, two, three. Coaches all around me. Coaches all around me.
I think we have a huge responsibility with the platform we have to really reach out to people in all walks of life. And, you know, I personally have a passion for kids and dealing with kids.
C-D-E-D.
People want to be around athletes, want to see what we have to say, and I want to be one of the guys that give them something that they can really take.
Good job. Good job.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. John Schmunk, Paul Dottino, and the man in the middle is Rob Rang. Of course, he's a friend of the program, does an excellent job, NFLDraftScout.com. Rob is as good of a knowledge of this draft class as anyone in this building today, including the guys that are breaking it down for the NFL teams. Rob, let's first start. First of all, thanks for joining us. Measurements, we've had them yesterday and today. Anybody draw any big red flags to you? Anybody overperform where you think they would be? Any big impact measurements over the last couple of days that we should be aware of?
Well, I think the one player that you have to mention would be the Maryland wide receiver, DJ Moore. He came in at 6 foot, 210 pounds. That is taller and thicker than we anticipated.
Yeah, I think he was at 5'10 in Maryland, right?
Exactly. And usually it's the exact opposite that happens, is you see players that wind up coming in a little bit smaller than expected. You know, there's been some big news as far as the quarterbacks. You know, In years past, we've seen all this hand-wringing, so to speak, about the hand size of quarterbacks. But this year, whether it be Sam Darnold, Lamar Jackson, everybody came in with getting to that threshold of the nine and a quarter inch hands. And so because of that, there's not going to be the concern this year. And the fact that there is no news there is news in and of itself.
Let me ask you about the measurements, Rob. Of all the different positions, which position do you think pays the most attention to the measurements?
I think it's probably going to be quarterbacks and the hand size. Certainly at the offensive line positions, if you have a tackle, say Texas's Connor Williams, who is my personal top-rated offensive tackle, and he came in with 33-inch arms. It's a little bit shorter than you'd like, 296 pounds, a little bit lighter than you'd like. And so because of those factors, I think that also can be a significant factor. So quarterbacks, offensive linemen, I think, are the two critical positions.
See, the tricky part for me is that we know that a lot of these prospects – go into combine training to get whatever numbers that they want to get and present to the NFL teams. But then you got the pro days coming up after that, which I know for a fact a lot of scouts will say, that's what I'm really concerned about, not so much the combine stuff.
No, exactly, especially like in the case of a Sam Darnold, who was elected not to throw here. You know, you have a lot of times you have the skill position players who will weigh in heavier than expected because they're not planning on working out here. They're planning on just getting on the scale or measuring up, and then as you mentioned, they go with their pro day and suddenly they lose 8 or 10 pounds because it's all water weight, you know. So That's why I think that it is important to keep that in mind when you're looking at the measurements. How do they weigh in here at the combine? How do they weigh in at their pro day? And if they went to one of those senior all-star games, what is the differentiation between those three different events for those senior prospects?
And, Rob, one guy I want to bring up on the measurement side, and this is the last thing we'll do on the measurements, Quentin Nelson. Mm-hmm. His arm length was almost good enough, it looked like, to play tackle. And considering how dominant he was as guard, when he went to Notre Dame, he was going to be a tackle until they realized, oh, we got Ronnie Stanley and Mike McGlinchey here. We can just put him at guard and be fine. Is this a guy that you think can transfer to either right or maybe even left tackle at some point in the NFL if an NFL team wants to go down that route?
I think that he has the athletic ability to be able to pull that off. I just believe that he's a walk-in Pro Bowl guard. And if you're going to ask him to make that transition, obviously at left tackle, you're going to be going against some of the speed rushers in the NFL. You're going to ask him to play on the right side. He hasn't played the right side since back in high school. So because of those factors, I still think that the smart money would be to keep him inside at guard where, again, I think he can make more of an immediate impact for your team. And frankly, gentlemen, I think that we're seeing in today's NFL, guards are much more important than they were just a few years ago. Yeah. One of the reasons why the Philadelphia Eagles and some of the other teams, the Rams, some of the teams that kind of jumped up this season is because of their interior pass rush. And so when you have quarterbacks who either do not have great, natural, elusive skills or that in the short passing game in today's modern passing era, then that interior pass rush is every bit as important as the exterior pass rushers.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the guards, Rob, and I want to go back to that for a second because Dave Gettleman, the Giants GM, spoke about that yesterday saying, you know what, guards are worth what they get paid because you need them to block that pass rush, keep your quarterback clean. But here's the thing. It used to be, and he talks about hog mollies. Mm-hmm. George Young used to talk about the elephants, mm-hmm. Doing the big dance. Over the course of time, we have seen technique-oriented guards, mm-hmm. guys who ran the outside zone scheme, who had to have quick feet, who had to be able to get to the edge to block for the running backs. Do you think there's going to be a trend now more towards the gigantic elephant type of guards as opposed to those technique guys?
I think that there will be a bit of a trend in that way because I think that the way that the NFL is trending is to be a short passing game and to be able to get the ball out of the hands of the quarterback as quickly as possible. And if you have these massive elephant-style offensive linemen, then it just gives you that initial protection. And I don't know that you're going to see quite as much of the running game that is a function of, say, the zone blocking schemes and things like that. The NFL passed a rule a couple of years ago where offensive linemen weren't allowed to kind of cut block at the second level the way that they have in the past. And so because of that, you're taking away some of those offensive linemen that are more technically sound than they are physically massive. And so I think that is just going to pump up the value of some of those guards. If you look around the league, the guards who are getting those multi-million dollar deals are the ones who are the 6'5", 330-pound, 340-pound monsters. And so that's why I think that it fits in very well for a player like Quentin Nelson who already has that mm-hmm. type of size.
Rob, we're going to try to focus in on some defensive guys with you. But first, let's get to the elephant in the room, the Giants, the second overall, obviously. we'll hit that first, and then we'll get to some of the deeper guys on the defensive side. If the Giants decide to go quarterback and Darnold's off the board, how do you rate through the rest of the guys on your list? And do you think, just in terms of value, how does that compare to going with the Chubb or Barkley or even a Quentin Nelson type?
Yeah, to me, it really comes down to the individual team. For the Giants specifically, because you have a future Hall of Famer in Eli Manning, you believe that he's going to be able to be healthy and he's going to be able to play every game, then I think that Josh Rosen should be a consideration because he is my number two quarterback. He's the player that I think that of this rookie class can come in and make the most immediate impact because he's the most polished passer of the group. That said, I think that he also has some questions. I heard you guys mention before about the leadership concerns. He does have a little bit more of a frail frame. The medical concerns, the fact that in his three seasons at UCLA, two of them he didn't finish the season.
Yeah.
And so because of all those factors, I don't know that it makes a lot of sense. When you already have a young quarterback on the roster in Davis Webb, then it doesn't make a lot of sense, in my opinion, to go with a quarterback who has that immediate impact potential but maybe doesn't have quite the upside of, say, a quarterback like like a Josh Allen. So for the Giants specifically, I think a quarterback like Josh Allen would make some sense because he has the highest upside, if that's the option that you chose to go with. I still think that for the Giants, maybe a possibility of a more immediate impact, whether it be a defender, whether it be Saquon Barkley. I think those are the kind of players that can help the Giants go from a season, frankly, at 3-13, I think was a fluke. I think it was more about injuries, and that once the Giants have a little bit more consistency in terms of health, if they can get an immediate impact player at two, and let's face it, you should. The guys mentioned the fact that a couple of years ago when they had that number two overall pick, they had great Lawrence Taylor at number two. They had Carl Banks at number three overall. I think that's the type of immediate impact player that you're looking for.
Let me ask you this, Rob. I think we're all pretty sure, pretty confident, there's no linebacker worth taking at number two overall. But the Giants clearly need to refortify their linebacking core because, let's face it, they haven't done very well lately, and they got a lot of free agents there. There are three or four, I think, first-round linebackers probably in this draft. Would they have to maybe make a deal to get back up into the end of that first round with one of their extra picks, like the compensatory, to maybe get one of those guys? Would you see a good fit there?
I do. And one of the linebackers who I think would be an exceptional fit would be Leighton Van Der Esch. And he's a quarterback who I think that might be on your list of the three to four linebackers who might be able to make that first round. And I just like his instincts. I like that his toughness. He's obviously coming from a very small program, relatively speaking, at Boise State. And he was a kid that grew up in rural Idaho. And so that would be a transition from just moving to New York City, of course. But at the same time.
Can he cover?
He can, and that's one of the things that's why I believe that he would be a fit. To me, the other linebackers you're talking about are Roquan Smith, easy first-round pick, Tremaine Edwards from Virginia Tech, easy first-round pick. Leighton Van Der Esch is a player that is moving up. I think he's going to be terrific this week at the Combine, and I think that the Giants, if they did decide they want him, might have to trade up in that late portion of the first round, but he might be available just because there's going to be so many teams who are going to go for those quarterbacks that there's going to be some darn good football players who are going to slide into the top portion of the second round.
Could Evans be a late 20?
I think he could. And Rashawn Evans is a good player. He's not the same type caliber of athlete as a Van Der Esch. And so that's one of the reasons why a guy like Rashawn Evans, I think that you're getting an immediate plug-and-play kind of a guy who has the physicality you're looking for to be able to solidify the run defense. I don't know that he has the same coverage skills. I don't believe that he does have the same coverage skills as what Van Der Esch provides, and that's why I think that Van Der Esch should be a better fit for Big Blue.
If you're looking for a speed linebacker, but you're not using a first or second-round pick on him, and you're waiting until third round, maybe even start of the fourth, where the Giants pick at the top of the fourth round. They also have an extra compensatory pick at the end of the fourth round. Any speed guys that you think will be left on the board at that point, or if you want one, you better get one first couple rounds?
Well, I certainly think that the fastest linebackers, you're going to want to go early. They're going to go early just because we've seen the way that the NFL is changing now. But at the same time, I got a name for you that I think is going to impress some people in terms of his workouts, and that he is going to be listed as a day three pick for a lot of people. And so I think that he has a potential future NFL starter on him, and that'd be Azeem Victor from the University of Washington. And he was suspended for a late portion of his senior season this past year, but at the same time, he was a starter early in his career. He was a standout for Washington. He was an All-Pac-12 player. He's instinctive. He's very physical, and he does have enough athletic ability to be able to play back in space. So he is a guy that if the team is a little bit willing to do some their due diligence in terms of character, questions about that kind of stuff, then I think that they're going to find that Azeem Victor is a player who can play in the NFL, and you might be able to draft him, say, in the fourth, fifth, sixth round and still be able to have a potential starter.
Where would you slot Shaquem Griffin with one hand?
Shaquem Griffin it's hard to believe until you watch this kid on tape. He is a terrific football player. I mean, everybody wants to talk about the story, one hand. But, as a former coach myself, one of the things I used to try and ask offensive linemen to try and do is to be able to grab the linebackers. And if they get their hands on you, then you grab their wrists. And so that way you can pull them down to the ground. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with Shaquem Griffin not having a left hand, then you're not able to grab his wrist. And so his ability to punch offensive linemen and get off of blocks, it's something that you wouldn't really appreciate until you watch it on tape. And he also is incredibly instinctive, incredibly agile, as a former safety. And so because of all those factors, I think that he does absolutely have a place in the NFL, not just as a special teams demon, but as a potential starter in the NFL. And we were talking about linebackers that might be available on day three. Shaquem Griffin is one of the very first players I thought of. And so he's a great story. I mean, Hallmark should take note. They're going to make a movie about this kid someday. day. But he's also a very good football player who has the personality. He has the toughness. I think all those different factors that you have to have if you're going to play in a big market like New York City.
How about the cornerback position? I'm taking a look at a lot of these guys, and Rob, you don't see a lot of like 6'3 and 6'2 corners running around. A lot like the wide receivers. You got a bunch of slot receivers and a bunch of corners that know how to cover slot receivers, a bunch of guys that are between 5'11 and 5'10 and 6 foot. How deep do you think the corner class is? And if you're looking for a corner, how high do you think you'd have to go? Is there going to be a good one available in that 3, 4, 5th round range?
No, I think there are some good corners. Very few of them have the size, as you mentioned. I mean, this is a cornerback class. It's full of guys who are in that 5'10", 5'11 range. I personally believe in what the Giants already have in the fold. I mean, obviously the Eli Apple situation, but, you know, I am encouraged by what I've heard so far about Eli Apple and about what Janoris Jenkins can do. And so I believe that while that is a position of concern for the Giants, I think that there's enough depth at this year's draft class at corner that you might be able to find a player. Isaiah Oliver is one from Colorado who is a guy who immediately jumps out at me as a player that isn't getting quite as much attention as perhaps he should. He was a little bit overshadowed by some of the defensive backs with the Buffaloes two years ago. But this past season, he was even better. And so he is a guy. But if you're looking for cornerbacks in this class that have size, you're probably going to have to invest a late first-round pick, which obviously would require trading back up, or an early second-round pick. It's not a great class that way. Josh Jackson, from Iowa would probably be the best of the corners who has size, but I expect him to be off the board in the top 45 picks.
John Eichelman would go safety because I think that with Betcher as the new defensive coordinator, the safety, especially the guy who plays some pseudo-linebacker stuff, is going to be a big deal for him. He's very fluid with how he plays his guys. I don't see the Giants taking a safety in the first or second round. But could there be a guy who would help that kind of scheme in the third or fourth round?
In this draft class, I think this isn't a great safety class, in my opinion. I think that you're going to see guys like Harrison from Alabama who are going to wind up going early. Obviously, the Florida State kid, Derwin James. But I just don't see the safeties in this class that are going to make a lot of sense in the third or fourth rounds. They're going to be that immediate plug-and-play kind of a guy. If there was one, we mentioned Tremaine Edmonds, that Terrell Edmonds, his younger brother, is a player who does have that size and physicality. I used the comparison before to another ex-Virginia Tech player, Seattle's Cam Chancellor, and Chancellor was a perfect fit for Pete Carroll's scheme.
Right.
But that's that type of intimidating factor that you're talking about that I think that would make some sense. And again, because he has the experience playing Virginia Tech, a very physical, very aggressive defense, I think that would be a potential fit, likely to be available in about the third round.
Rob, we'll take a call with you in a second, but I want to get a question about the defensive line because Dave Gettleman has not been camouflaging at all his history of drafting defensive linemen. He's done it a lot. He has guys on the roster. He drafted Vernon Butler anyway. He didn't care. What do you think of this defensive line class, and if the Giants want to go there, like I said, again, middle rounds, who are some of the prospects, either as a pass rusher or as a three technique, that they might be looking at? Because they already have those two big run stuffers in the middle in Tomlinson and Snacks Harrison.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very good defensive tackle class. I mean, this is the edge rushers are not quite so good. Bradley Chubb is the one that everybody's going to talk about, and he's a superstar. I think that he should be a consideration for most teams in the top five, perhaps not the Giants, just because, again, if you get a little bit more of a return to health from Vernon and from Jason Pierre-Paul, then I don't think that's going to be quite as much concern.
Right.
But your point is well made that Dave Gettleman has relied on the hog mollies on the offensive and defensive side throughout his entire career. In this defensive tackle class, one of the guys that I would mention is Kentavious Street. He was another player while at NC State. Everybody's focusing on Bradley Chubb, but Street is a guy who's going to work out incredibly well this week. And he is a guy that you see flashes. He played some defensive end. He played some defensive tackle at NC State. Went to the East-West Shrine game. I had one scout tell me that he was far and away the best player there. 6'2", 275, 280 pounds, so he doesn't have that elite size that you're looking for. But that's the type of players who I think are becoming more and more important in today's NFL. We talked about how teams are looking for those pass rushers who can get and make some an impact in the interior.
Yeah.
He can do that, so I think that he'd be a fit for the Giants.
One quick call for Rob Rang. Let's go to Justin in New Jersey. He has a question about the draft. Justin, go ahead for Rob.
Hey. I just have a suggestion for free agency and the draft.
Only the draft, Justin. Just give me the draft.
All right, yeah, okay. Some people don't look at a guy that I consider to be a sleeper, and that is Billy Price from Ohio State. I think he could be a good fit for us. We could switch him around in the offensive line teams with the offensive coordinator. A lot of people don't see him as a top offensive lineman, but I think we could look at him and Quentin Nelson and the guy from Mississippi State, Rankin. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, you know, we talked a ton about Nelson, but I think Price, center, guard, flex, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then what do you think of Martinez Rankin? We actually haven't talked about a lot about him so far in the show this week.
Yeah, well, first off, Billy Price, other than Quentin Nelson, Billy Price remains my top-rated interior offensive lineman in this draft class. James Daniels from Iowa is another one. He is more that agile player we talked about before, mm-hmm. the guys who can get to the second level. Billy Price is a nasty football player, and I mean that with the greatest of compliments. His versatility, his ability to play center, play guard, do it both at a high level, the physicality. Now, he isn't the big mauling type we talked about before that I think is going to become more popular. 6'2", 300 pounds, a little bit shorter arms, but his physicality, his toughness, his durability. This is a two-time All-American for an Ohio State team that's known for producing immediate impact offensive linemen. So I think he's about as safe as you can get. So sleeper maybe in terms of media coverage, because let's face it, not many interior offensive linemen get that kind of hype. But at the same time, he is very well known in the scouting community as being a guy that you can go to battle with in day one. With Martinez Rankin, he's an athletic tackle. He is a guy that has that size and that physicality that I think that the Giants and other clubs are going to be looking for. The question with him is he a true left tackle? Well, I think that his best position would be kind of be a swing guy for a team that perhaps has some holds all across the board. They want to draft a player and then see where he fits in best with that current group. I think that's where Martinez Rankin fits in best, and he's probably in that right outside of the top 50, probably in that top 64 to top 75 selection.
Rob, great stuff, my friend. Always good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Rob.
We'll be back with Joel Corey, former NFL agent, when we get back on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Stay with us.
Man, Combine Week was one of the craziest weeks of my life. All I remember is just the crazy meetings, being nervous, all the crazy tests, all the crazy questions. But my biggest memory was getting the cold tub every single night. Every single night, cold tub, 10 minutes, making sure my legs was right. And then once the field day came up, ready to do drills, I was fresh, ready to go. I ran one of the fastest times at the Combine, so I give all the credit to that cold tub. So Combine Week was a crazy week, biggest blessing, and definitely a week I won't forget.
You're getting a guy that has that it factor, you know? You can't teach it, you can't learn it. It's either you have it or you don't. This is what I love to do. This is my passion.
Let me tell you something. One of the funniest things was Deion Sanders. Okay. He, of course, is he going to run? Is he going to run? So he shows up and he says, I'm running 2:40s and that's it. He gets up there and he runs his first 40 and he runs like a 4.28. It's some ridiculous thing. So we figure he's not going to run the second one. Oh, no, he said, I'm running the 40s. He comes back, and the way it's set up, when you finish your 40, if you continue straight, you can run right out of the stadium, all right? He comes up for his second 40. He takes off. He runs about a 4.25, and as he's running away, he's waving at us. We all gave him a standing ovation. It was hysterical. It was hysterical. That's one of my favorites.
We're back on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. John Schmuck, Paul Dottino, and our new guest is Joel Corey, former NFL agent, is the master of the salary cap and free agency. As we mentioned, really a lot more going on in terms of veterans and free agency right now than it is the draft this early in the combine process. Joel, thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Any other veterans you think are going to get cut loose in the next couple days? We already saw, obviously, across town with the Jets and Muhammad Wilkerson. Anybody else you think might be on the chopping block in short order?
One that interests me is Michael Bennett with Seattle because Cliff Averill is probably done.
Right.
They did an extension for Bennett at the end of the 2016 season. So if they let him go, they're essentially giving him $8.5 million more than he would have gotten if he let his contract expire, which would have been right now anyway.
Right.
So can they really lose both defensive ends? So that's one that really intrigues me.
How about Des Bryant? You know, the Joneses are very loyal to their players, but at the same time, for that cap number, he did not give that team the production they needed last year.
No, he's performing like a high-end number two receiver, and when you sign a deal for $14 million a year, they expect you to catch 80 balls, 1,200 yards, get close to double-digit touchdowns. His big problem is Dak Prescott does not look at him the same way that Tony Romo did. He has to be open, whereas Tony would just throw it and allow him to use his big body to make sure the ball wasn't intercepted.
Drops doesn't help me either, though.
Yeah.
He had some drop issues last year.
And some injury issues.
Yeah.
So he's not worth the $12.5 million in each of the last 2 years. So he may have to take a pay cut to stick around. And if he does stick around, he should become Dak Prescott's best friend. Move in with him if he has to so he can develop better chemistry.
Joel, I'm going to direct it a little closer to home with the Giants. Kevin Abrams, when he was the interim GM at the end of last season, before Dave Gettleman was named, said to everybody, we have enough money under the salary cap to do what we need to get done. We're not crunched. We're not crippled up against it. As you look at the Giant numbers, how do you feel they're positioned to do some things in free agency?
Well, they've got a decent amount of cap room. They're not like one of these teams that's flush over $60 million in cap room. They're also not the Eagles, who have to shed some payroll to be cap compliant. The question is, which offensive linemen are they going to keep? You got Justin Pugh, and you got your center, Richburg. So you got two guys who would be near the top of the market in terms of demand. And last year we saw in free agency that it was good to be an offensive lineman. The linemen in the draft are a little better than last year. But even though you may not have had the best year and coming off some injury issues, you're still probably going to command a pretty high salary if you're a competent offensive lineman.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you also see things that the Giants could maybe do to create more space if they had to, in your opinion?
Yeah, there are a couple things they can do. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, for one, is in a contract year. So that's one guy where you can pick up, I think, like $6.5 million. You can get over $5 million if you part ways with Brandon Marshall. So that's two right there where you can get cap room.
Now, see, I want to bring something up to the fans because I don't think the fans understand this, and I know it's complicated. That's why you're an expert and you're so good at it. What if the Giants went to, hypothetically, I have no idea if they're doing this, but went to a guy like Eli Manning or Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and said, you know what, we still think you got more juice in that orange. We convert some of your stuff to signing bonus and give you an extra year on the back end of your contract so we can fiddle with the numbers. Is that something you would recommend doing?
Well, sometimes teams will do that, but they'll throw fake years in because they don't want to have the guy under contract in the future. Kansas City did that with Tom Bailey a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. They're fake years in Drew Brees' contract. The problem is that when those fake years void, you're going to have dead money under the cap. You're going to lower the cap this year. And with Eli, do you really want to do anything where you're going to mess with his cap number when you're probably going to have his replacement or heir apparent coming in? Do you want to create potentially dead money if you're going to move on from him sooner rather than later? I know he's safe for this year, but next year could be a question mark.
How about the future planning part of this? And I think Giant fans always call in and have these questions like, well, you know, John, if you look at the per-year salary, they can sign two big offensive linemen this year and be fine. But if you look ahead, Odell Beckham's, you know, fifth-year option is going to be up. He's going to be a free agent. Landon Collins is going to be a free agent. And those two guys are literally at the top of their position groups. How much do teams plan years ahead for situations like this? And how do you think the Giants are going to try to manage those two guys coming up with what they're going to try to do to help their team now in free agency this year?
Typically, teams look in three-year snapshots. So they're looking a couple years down the road as well, what they can do, who may be there, who may not, who we can get cap room from, who we're going to extend. You can probably get some cap room this year if you do the deal with Beckham. His option's about $8.5 million. The problem is at least last summer, had no clue how the NFL salary structure worked. I want to be the highest paid player in the league. Not happening. He's not going to reset the pay scale, do something uncharted. You haven't had a wide receiver that has been the highest paid player in the salary cap era. It just hasn't happened. You have had a receiver or two be the highest paid non-quarterback. That's probably the best he can do. You had Larry Fitzgerald, highest paid non-quarterback in 11. You had Calvin Johnson, who took it from Larry Fitzgerald and held it till J.J. Watt's deal. But that market is going to hit over $20 million per year because you're going to have two defensive players do that, Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack. His best bet to get that type of money or close to it is let them go first. I know he's been kind of impatient, wants a deal yesterday. Let them do the heavy lifting, raise the bar, and try to come in under them. His problem is, as productive as he's been, he's coming off an injury plague year. So that's never the time when you want to do a contract, but it's only going to be held against him so much, if at all, because of how great he's been.
I want to build off of that, if I can, excuse me, Joel, sure. Because I think it's a relevant point. You talk about over the next 2 years, Beckham and Collins may be coming up for big-time contracts, but they're also talking there's a possible uncapped year that could be coming up soon, too. How do you think that fits into the equation?
No, there's no uncapped year in this CBA. It's every year's cap. The last one had an uncapped year. It just runs out in 2020, and we don't know what's going to happen after 2020.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. So that's 2 years. Well, 3 years from now, 2021.
I'm assuming there's a work stoppage. I'm just counting on one.
Gee, thanks. You just brought out the sunshine in the building. But, I mean, that's got to be something that these owners, if they're going to sign long-term, big-time contracts for these guys, 2021 has to be in their heads.
Yeah, I might want to front-load it now if I can, because I don't know what's going to happen in the future and what the new collective bargaining agreement is going to have in it. But you got to assume the players are going to try to get some claw back, because – the owners really beat them up this last round. So that's why I think there'll be a work stoppage. I think that they're going to probably be a little more resolute than they were last time around.
Now, in terms of the future planning, you talked about Odell, how he might handle a situation. A, what do you think of Landon Collins, and more specifically the safety market? What is that like? And then number two, how are the Giants going to be limited this year, you think, in what they do to have the funds necessary to do what they need to do for those two players down the road?
Well, if you do Collins, his cap number's got to go up because he's a second-round pick. I'm sure he's looking at what happened last year. You had Rashad Jones, Miami, Cam Chancellor, Seattle. Those guys, $12 million per year, over $30 million, $35 million guarantees. Granted, Landon Collins did not have the year in 2017 it had in 2016. He's still probably the best young strong safety. So he's going to be right up there. He may think I should get more than Eric Berry, which is $13 million a year, $40 million in guarantees. And it may be in his best interest to see if Earl Thomas generally raises the safety bar if he gets a new deal. He's in a contract year. And I know he's going to want more than Eric Berry because he was the highest paid safety when he signed his deal in 2014. So one thing you're not going to do on a go-forward basis is I can't imagine they're picking up Eric Flowers' option. It's probably going to be about $13 million since he was a top-10 pick. Mm-hmm. That's one you pass on. And if he plays well this season and you have to do an extension, you do one. But I wouldn't put a $13 million or $12.5 million option on Eric Flowers based on what we've seen so far.
So realistically then, this year, do you think the Giants could figure it out cap-wise and, you know, finagling contracts, how the money is spread out, to bring in two big offensive linemen in free agency? Or do you think one big guy and then maybe a third or a fourth-tier guy in addition? What do you think is realistic for Giant fans to expect?
Realistically, one, but there are ways to do two. If you want to go the Ndamukong Suh contract Miami structure route, low first-year cap number, ballooning second-year cap number, where you're going to have to probably restructure and then kick the can down the road. But you could get in the Andrew Norwell sweepstakes. That's probably going to have to be making him the highest paid guard. Last 2 years in free agency, you've had guards hit the open market, Kelechi Osemele and Kevin Zeitler, become the highest paid player at the position. So I don't expect anything less from Andrew Norwell. Nate Solder is really the only legitimate left tackle out there. Mm-hmm. And if Russell Okung can become the highest paid offensive lineman by average yearly salary, why can't Nate Solder?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And quite frankly, I'm going to throw another name at you who's often named in the same sentence as Solder, and that's Justin Pugh, who plays four positions but has had some injury troubles. What do you think the competition and the market's going to be if the Giants are going to try to retain him?
Well, you got to go at least $10 million per year. You're going to have to go that Joel Bitonio range. That was a guy that was coming off injuries in Cleveland, signed an extension around the same time that they paid Zeitler and made him the highest-paid guard. Mm-hmm. I think Pugh's best position is guard. The tackle stuff, the versatility is great, but you really probably don't want him playing outside. You want him in at guard because he's an upper echelon guard, and upper echelon guards are now $10 million per year. Last year you saw guys like Larry Warford, Ron Leary, who aren't quite the player that he is, get 8.5, 9. So you're probably going to be double digits for him.
With those numbers, could they afford to sign a Norwell and retain Pugh?
It's possible, but you may have to go smaller first-year cap number to do it.
Yeah. How much is Pugh's agent going to be running around telling teams that, oh, yeah, he can start a right tackle for
oh,
you?
Oh, yeah, he's going to say he's going to say the versatility should get a premium, that he can be your right tackle. He may even go on a stretch and say, you could play him at left tackle. I don't think that's advisable.
And he could play quarterback.
And by the way, one guy I know Paul likes is another offensive lineman from the Patriots, Cameron Fleming, right?
Yes,
Paul,
I do.
What do you think the market's going to be like for him?
Oh, he's underrated to me. I don't know why.
And he's only 25.
Yeah, I don't know why Laydon Waddle was ahead of him on the depth chart. But he did a pretty good job in the playoffs once Cannon was out and Waddle was hurt. I think you're going to at least see him in the Mike Remmers range because I didn't think Mike Remmers was very good. Mike Remmers got $6 million per year.
Yeah.
And what I saw that last year in Carolina, I'm like, really? And then I remember the Super Bowl with Von Miller. I'm like, hey, Von Miller became MVP and made a lot of money off of you. So I think you're going to have some teams which are interested in Cam Fleming, like maybe a Houston because the connection with the Patriots up there. And they need offensive linemen the worst way down in Texas.
And see, I don't want to help Belichick because he doesn't need it, but he should let Soldier walk for the big money he wants and retain Fleming at that decent rate.
But can you play him at left tackle? I know he's played some in the past, but
I'd take a shot at it. I think the economics make it doable.
Oh, it does. It's much cheaper because you got a right tackle, Cannon, making like $6.5 million. And
they got Garcia, too, who basically redshirted last year.
Yep, that's true. That's true.
Joe, final question. We should talk about the quarterback position because you never have this quarterback market in free agency like you have this year. Kirk Cousins, I know Drew Brees is technically a free agent. No one expects him to leave. Case Keenum. These teams that are in the market, how much is contract structure going to be important? You know, the Jets can probably throw $60 million guaranteed to Kirk Cousins in the first 2 years. The Vikings probably can't be quite as aggressive in when they go after him. How do you think that market's going to play out?
Oh, structure is everything in NFL contracts because they're not worth the paper. They're printed on since they're not fully guaranteed.
Yep.
I know Cousins' agent, Mike McCartney, sharp guy, he's going to be looking at structure more than anything else. So I'm curious to see if my hypothesis is right.
What's your hypothesis?
That if you have a good, not great quarterback in his prime that's healthy, hit the open market, he's going to reshape the market. And I've been saying for over a year, if Cousins is unrestricted, he could potentially be the first $30 million per year guy, $100 million guarantees, and at least 65 fully guaranteed at signing.
Can the Vikings, with their cap situation, afford that? Because I think if Cousins wants to win,
That's his best bet. That's a ready-made team. They're going to have like 50, 55 million cap room.
But they have a lot of young guys coming up too, right?
Yeah, but there's some of those guys who already have huge cap numbers,
okay,
like on a fifth-year option. So you could get cap room from Anthony Barr if you did him. They've got the cap room to bring Cousins in if they want to do it. Rob Brzezinski, really sharp guy, but he's been structuring contracts which are pretty team-friendly as opposed to what Cousins may want, because like the Linval Joseph and Evanson Griffin deals, I'm like, wow, you can get out of those with like no adverse cap consequences.
Wow.
If those guys don't continue to play at a high level.
A couple seconds here. We still have?
Yeah, last one.
All right, very simple. I forgot my question.
All right, so I guess we're going to say goodbye.
No, I know what it is. We've been asking people, Joel. We've been asking people who the Giants are going to pick at number two. I'm not going to ask you that. I'm going to ask you which outside free agent is most likely to land in Big Blue.
That's an interesting one.
See, that's why it took me time to reconstruct it.
Well, you really need a running back, but it's not a great running back year.
How about offensive linemen?
You need multiple offensive linemen. I'm going to say because of Dave Gettleman having the Carolina connection, Andrew Norwell.
Okay. I think that'll make Giant fans
Or Graham Gano if they don't franchise him.
Yeah. By the way, do you think there's a chance they might franchise Norwell?
No, not for $14 million because it's all left tackle numbers. There's no distinction between the three positions.
Which makes no sense.
I know, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make
None.
Any sense.
Transition tag, maybe? Or you don't think so?
No, I don't think so. They may put a tag on a kicker for $5 million, Gano.
Yeah, I saw that report.
I don't know if I'd do that.
Joel, great stuff. We appreciate it,
my friend. Thank you.
Joel Corey, former medical agent, does a great job. We'll be back. I'll take a couple of your calls, and then we'll have Jenny Ventress from Monday Morning Quarterback as well. We'll be right back.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I think it's very important to give back to the community.
Nice to meet you. How you doing, guys?
Hey.
Ready for some football?
I think the Giants organization does a great job.
How you doing, buddy? Good?
Yeah.
Glad to see you out here, man.
I try to be a part of that. I try to help out as much as I can just for the community.
Smile, guys.
I feel like especially the younger generation, they're going to be the next up. So to start them off early and be able to give back to them and show them the way, it's just setting us up for the future.
Have a Merry Christmas.
You guys get a gift bag?
Yeah.
You got a gift card in there and then get some games.
It's really important for us to continue to do that.
You're getting a guy that has that it factor, you know? You can't teach it. You can't learn it. It's either you have it or you don't. This is what I love to do. This is my passion.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Schmel, Paul Dottino. Jenny Ventress will be joining us in just a second, but let's take a couple more calls before she gets here at 201-939-4513. All right, let's go to Mike in Boston. He's been holding the longest. Mike, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hey, fellas, how's it going?
Doing great, Mike. What's up?
Real quick. All right, I wanted to weigh in on picking a running back. I obviously have other qualifications, so I'll be quick, you know. But I just wanted to throw something out there. Hypothetically, if you're looking back at the 2014 draft class, which is where we took Odell Beckham, you had other guys like Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald, and I think picking at number two, no one would be upset if you took any one of those three, punched the ticket, walked off the stage. And I feel like looking at this draft class, obviously there's a case for the quarterback as well, very strong quarterback class. But with Saquon Barkley and Quentin Nelson, I'm kind of looking at them the same way you'd look at Odell and Aaron Donald, you know, respectively for their positions. So hypothetically, if you looked at Odell Beckham and if you were able to take him for his entire rookie contract, including the fifth-year option, and let's say he's able to get his first contract, you know, after his rookie deal, for let's say a 5-year contract at $20 million that he's asking, just hypothetically, if you were able to take all the snaps he would play in both of those contracts, his first 10 years, and compress them into his rookie contract, pay him the same amount of money, on his rookie contract, whatever he's making now, but have him play that many snaps, I think it would be a no-brainer. And I feel like with the running back, that's what you're getting. A lot of guys say, well, they get banged up. The longevity is not the same as other positions. But you're playing so many more snaps than you would at specialty positions. And so I feel like you take a guy like a Saquon Barkley, yeah, you're putting more miles on him. And I almost feel it's unfair to the running back because by the time they get past their rookie deal and they're free agents, they've already been banged up so much more because of that. So that's just kind of, you know, a little take I wanted to throw out there and kind of get your opinion on.
No, I hear you, and thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. There is a longevity issue, though, and you're not getting 10 seasons worth of productions in 5 seasons. You're getting 5 years worth of production in 5 seasons. So that's
right.
Why I wouldn't phrase the question that way necessarily, Paul. You know what I mean?
I agree with you, and I honestly believe it's not about number of snaps. It's about what that guy poses as a threat to the defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
That's more important than his touches or his overall stats, so to speak. It's about the threat. I mean, we talked about it even when Odell Beckham Jr. wasn't feeling his best and he was coming back from the sore hamstring. It's the threat of him on the field.
Of course.
That helps make a difference and an impact in the game. Even if he doesn't catch 5 passes for 120 yards, he can impact that game. So when you're talking about the value of a Saquon Barkley, part of that value is that he is a threat
to score a touchdown anytime he touches the ball from any place on the field.
And now, in fairness, he will touch the ball more in a season than a wide receiver will, too. So that's
absolutely
part of the impact as well.
Absolutely.
Let's go to Jordan in New York. He's up next. Hi, Jordan. How are you, buddy?
Hello.
How you doing?
What's up, Jordan?
How you doing?
Hi.
All right. My question is, do you think there's a good chance that the Browns could take Saquon Barkley from the first pick and then go get a good quarterback? And if so, where do you think the Giants would pick?
Honestly, I don't. And Jordan, thanks for the call. We're going to have Aaron Goldhammer, who covers the Browns for ESPN Cleveland, on later in the show. We're going to ask him just that very question, so stay tuned. You'll get a better answer than what Paul and I can give. But the way I see it, the Browns have been searching for a quarterback since Bernie Kosar. It's been literally 30 years. I can't imagine John Dorsey's strategy is going to be, I'll just pick the guy that's left. I mean, this isn't you drafting a third baseman in your fantasy baseball league where you like four guys and you pick whatever guy's left. That's not how this is going to work. I'm pretty sure that he has orders from ownership to find the team's future franchise quarterback. Something tells me he ain't waiting until pick four to do it. He's going to pick him first overall.
You know, I think it's certainly possible, but I don't think so. The other thing that could happen, John, and we don't know because they have so many picks in the draft, Cleveland could also make a deal. Let's not kid ourselves. They may say, you know what? We got the four anyway. We're going to get a great player there. Maybe somebody does give them a boatload of picks for number one, and they actually do something else with
it. I can't imagine.
I don't think so either, but you can't discount the option because, as what George Young always used to say, you have to expect the unexpected when it comes to the draft. You have to.
Well, and we're going to get more insight about Cleveland again. Aaron will be joining us around 1:35, and we'll get in-depth on what the Browns will do at 1-4. I know some Giant fans have tweeted me, too, will the Browns maybe try to trade up from 4 to 2, which I don't think is real realistic.
I don't see that either.
Because they're going to get a great player at 4 no matter who's left
Correct.
For them, whether it's Bradley Chubb or
Correct.
Micah Fitzpatrick. Or say, they can even get Barkley at 4. There's no guarantee he's going to be picked in the top 3.
Although I had somebody say to me, for the first time in NFL history, that kind of deal would give a team the first and second picks overall in the draft. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be cool? Well, cool is one thing, but smart's another.
All right, let's go to Julian in Florida. He's up next. Hi, Julian. What's going on? What's on your mind today?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Hi.
So really, because I know you guys are trying to get to the phone call. So we never really can predict what's going on with the draft, right? I mean, for the past couple of years, no one really predicted. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think anyone thought we were going to get Eli Apple number 10. It seemed like when it happened, everyone was just like, whoa. And then
I wasn't shocked, by the way. I said on Bob Papa's Papa Cast going into the draft, Eli Apple was one of the guys under consideration for me.
Okay. Well,
so, not everybody was shocked.
Surprise for everyone, right?
That's okay.
Right. Yeah, I was shocked. I definitely was. And then Evan Ingram last year, I think we all expected Njoku, and that was a little bit of a shock.
That was somewhat surprising.
Before, right. So, you know, I guess when we think about number two, and a lot of the talk is Barkley. We just gotta say to ourselves as Giants fans, we don't really know what's gonna happen. I think everyone just needs to kind of like understand
Good
that
point.
We can go any route here.
Yeah, look, absolutely. No one's going to argue that the draft is extremely unpredictable and there's really no way to know what's going to happen when you get there. Luckily, what made Eli Apple a bit of a surprise was that there were 10 teams picking before the Giants picked. This year's is just one. So you can narrow down to a small group of players and you can figure the Giants are going to get one of them, which makes it a little bit easier.
You think?
Yes. All right, we'll be right back. More guests coming your way on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Will, have a good one, everybody.
With the combine coming up, I thought I would reflect a little bit and think about my combine training. And I just remember being in the best shape of my life. You know, every day, 5 days a week, 6 days a week at a time, just working, grinding nonstop, eating healthy. You know, you have a meal plan. You got one day where you're doing 40 work. The next day, you're working the L drill. Next day is position work, and it's just nonstop. And, you know, it was a challenging time, but I also got in the best shape of my life, and I think it prepared me for the grind of the NFL and what was to come. So, you know, good luck to all the guys that's going to be entering the combine, and, you know, go ball out.
How you doing? Nice to meet you.
Just coming from a single parent household and to give back just always remind me of my childhood.
I didn't do what I do. Nah, I'm just playing. I ain't that advanced.
I always told myself if I get in a position, you know, I want to be able to help guys. So I always want to be relevant and have my face known in the community.
Hey, there we go.
What's going on, fam? Good. What's up? Y'all trying to hit the day or what, man?
Exactly.
I think it's very important to give back to the community.
Go! There you go.
I think the Giants organization does a great job. I try to be a part of that. I try to help out as much as I can just for the community.
Break it down, Jake.
Hard work on three. Hard work on three. One, two, three.
Hard work.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. John Schmoke, Paul Dottino. You should recognize the guy in the middle, a friend of the program, Tony Pauline, NFL Draft Analyst and DraftAnalyst.com. Check out his work. He does a fantastic job. Tony joins us every year to get ready for the draft. Tony, first things first, anybody jump out to you the last couple days in terms of what's going on with measurements?
I think Lamar Jackson, 6'2 and change, 216 pounds. People were very concerned about his frame. Is he going to be able to hold up at the next level? I think he's heading in the right direction. I like Lamar Jackson, the quarterback from Louisville. Needs some work on his game, but I think he's over one hump in the sense that 216 pounds, people can't complain that he's real thin now. Now he's just going to go out and throw the ball well.
If the Giants don't go QB in the first round, is that a realistic second-round option, or do you think someone's going to trade up to get him before the Giants go at 34?
I think there are teams late in round one, say if the Buffalo Bills can't move up and get a quarterback, they could take him. They got two picks back-to-back, 20 and 21. If the Minnesota Vikings don't get Kirk Cousins, they could also select him. So I think it would be a reach for him to get to the Giants in round two.
You know, we talk often about the four elite. Jackson's the number five, right, kind of a little separate from the other four elite quarterbacks. Will any of those four guys do something at this combine that's going to force them to either move ahead of the other three or behind the other three?
First thing is, I don't consider Baker Mayfield part of the elite quarterbacks. I have three elite quarterbacks, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, Sam Darnold. I think Baker Mayfield, he's a good quarterback, but I think there's a lot of hype. Now, to answer your question, Josh Allen has to throw with accuracy. If Josh Allen is missing receivers wide and high and having his balls go all over the place, he's going to fall. If he's accurate in a combine, which is a strange setting where he's throwing strange receivers, and he looks good, he's going to move to the front. Same thing with Sam Darnold. He's got to be accurate with his passes because Sam Darnold, you know, sometimes he drops those balls in unbelievably like a magician. Other times, the passes, you don't know where they're going. So he's got to be accurate. With Josh Rosen, I think it's more of a situation that we may not know for a while because it's going to be the interviews and it's going to be the medicals. So if Josh Rosen is expected to throw well. But if his medicals come back and there's some red flags, we may find out a week or two down the road that he's going to drop down boards. I think with Baker Mayfield, he's got to show some arm strength. Baker Mayfield does not have a strong arm. It doesn't have a strong arm on film. If you're at the Senior Bowl, his deep passes die in the wind,
and
the receivers are slowing up to wait for the ball to get to him. You can do that on Saturday. You can't do that on Sunday.
Interesting. So you think mostly arm strength is your concern with Mayfield more so than in his height, say?
Well, I mean, there are some good short quarterbacks, but, you know, you can't be short and not have a good arm. You know, you can't be short and be an undisciplined pocket passer. You know, my concern with Baker Mayfield, ironically, are some of the same concerns I had with Johnny Manziel. Baker Mayfield was an electrifying quarterback on Saturday. I just don't know that he's going to be able to do the same thing on Sunday that he did on Saturday. Is he going to be able to thread the needle on Sunday the way he did it on Saturday? I have my concerns about that. The deep ball, is he going to be able to play in a disciplined pocket, you know, on Sunday rather than run around like a chicken with no head the way he did on Saturday and basically improvise? Listen, I like Baker Mayfield. I hope the best for him. You're basically trying to project this at the next level. And I think there's a lot of hype around Baker Mayfield. You know, he may be a very good quarterback, but I think there are a lot of red flags, as there are with the top three guys.
Tony, I'm going to make an assumption here based on what you've already said. And look, I have heard enough because I'm not for the Giants taking a quarterback at the number two overall pick. Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur have said, if you've got a guy who's a guaranteed franchise guy for the next 10 years, you got to take him. But there are a bunch of people, and I think you might be one of them, who says, you know what, that guy doesn't exist in this draft.
Absolutely. Let's look at it two ways. Number one, all of these quarterbacks have great upside. They have the potential to develop into very productive quarterbacks at the next level, but they have an equal amount of downside. Rosen, you got the personality issues, you got the medicals. Josh Allen, you got the accuracy issues. Sam Darnold is a long time away from being NFL ready. Baker Mayfield may not just have the next level arm. The fact of the matter is I was more excited about the quarterback class in September of 2017 than I am in March of 2018.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because I don't think that the quarterbacks really improved. You expect a level of improvement in a prospect's game. We didn't really see that improvement in any of the quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield improved with production, but he's got some physical skills and some physical deficiencies,
right,
which are impossible to get over. So you're absolutely right. Now, the thing I will say about the Giants is, if they like Josh Allen, I think the Giants have two key elements that Josh Allen needs: time and a very good quarterback coach. If the Giants draft Josh Allen at two, they're not going to ask him to play right away, so he can learn behind Eli Manning. I think Pat Shurmur's an excellent quarterback coach. So then that's what Josh Allen needs. So if they, go with a quarterback, they like Josh Allen, I think they have the ingredients that could potentially turn Josh Allen to a good QB.
I want to follow up one more here, John. I think last year when we talked to you and I said I think Davis Webb would be a good fit for the Giants, I think you actually agreed with me. Your thoughts on what Webb may or may not have been able to do under the past regime during that year under Eli, and what maybe Shurmur could do with him now?
Yeah, we don't know. It's a matter of getting him some game time playing experience. The fact is he's got a lot of physical skills. He's got to develop into a quarterback. He was never a winner, but the fact is you got to assume he's ahead of the curve, sitting behind Eli Manning right, for basically most of the year, learning and basically going through a very difficult year. I think you make a good point. If they feel they've got their potential quarterback down the road, 3, 4, 5 years down the road in Davis Webb, there's no reason to use an early pick on a quarterback in this year's draft. So he has the physical skills. I was a little bit disappointed that he didn't really get much playing time last year. He really didn't play at all.
I think everybody feels
right,
that way.
But it is what it is. The teams want to win, and they're going to put the guy in the center who's going to win. They feel can win games for him.
Before we dive a little bit deeper into some of the mid and late round guys, Tony, if they don't go quarterback there, are you a Barkley guy? Are you a Chubb guy? Minka Fitzpatrick, Quentin Nelson? What do you think? Let me put it this way, because this is the way Gettleman and Shurmur put it yesterday. Which one of those other guys on the board has the best chance to be a generational Hall of Fame level player, or do none of them have that chance?
To answer that question, the answer, in my opinion, would be Saquon Barkley. He's a three-down back. He can take it on the inside. He has the power on the inside. He's got the shiftiness to make the defenders miss. He's got the speed and the quickness to turn the perimeter. He can run the daylight. He can run away from defensive players. He's a terrific pass catcher out of the backfield, and he's also a good return specialist. So I think he is a three-down player. I tend to lean towards defensive players because a really good defensive end like Bradley Chubb is going to have much greater impact than a running back, than Saquon Barkley. And I think Bradley Chubb is he a defensive end in a 4-3? Is he going to develop into a two-gap end? Doesn't matter. He makes plays. He makes a lot of plays up the field. Bottom line is Giants can't go wrong with either guy.
Okay, cool.
All right, so as we look at these guys at the running back positions, I think part of this is interesting before we get onto the defensive side of the ball. If you don't go Barkley, how big of a drop-off is it to that next group of guys, the Ronald Jones, the Darius Geises, the two kids out of Georgia, Chubb and Michelle? How big of a drop is that from Barkley to that next group?
It's significant in the sense that I think those guys have more question marks than Barkley, and I think that Barkley is going to be a feature runner early in his career where those guys may take some time. Now, Sonny Michel's quicker than Barkley. He's got more elusiveness than Barkley. He probably has a better burst than Barkley. Darius Geis, he also has a bit more elusiveness than Barkley. When I say elusiveness, I mean the ability to create yardage. Also a terrific pass catcher out of the backfield. I just think that right now, when you're comparing that, to answer your question, Barkley's the more complete package. Those guys have a way to go to show that they can be the complete package.
But it wouldn't shock you if one or two of that second group could develop into a running back of Barkley's level.
Yeah, close to it.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be Barkley's level.
Of course.
It could be a starter.
Sure.
Geis can be a starter at the next level. Sonny Michel could be a starter at the next level. Nick Chubb, in the right system from Georgia, could be a starter at the next level. Kerryon Johnson of Auburn could be a starter at the next level. Ronald Jones in a specific system. He's not a bigger guy, but he's got great speed. I like Royce Freeman, although he's not a back for everyone. He's a bigger back. So there are a lot of potential feature running backs in this year's draft that you can get in the second, potentially third round. I don't think any of them are going to develop into the ilk of Saquon Barkley, but I could be wrong. We'll see.
I got a general question for you, Tony. We haven't asked this of any of our guests so far, so you're going to be the first.
Uh-oh.
If the Giants were to get, let's say, three additional picks somewhere in the first four or five rounds by trading away the number two and moving down, let's say, six, seven, eight, nine slots, is there enough talent in this draft that there are 3 to 4 rounds of immediate guys who can give you at least rotational snaps that it would be worth it for them to do it?
At certain positions, yes. Other positions, no. I mean, it's a good tight end class. It's a good running back class. It's a good pass rusher class. You've got some depth at the cornerback position. It's a terrible safety class. I'm not a big fan of the offensive tackle class because I like left tackles. There aren't too many left tackles here. It's a very thin center class. The guard class is good at the top, and then it kind of falls off. So, yeah, I mean, if they're targeting players at certain positions, there's going to be depth there at those positions.
Where are you going to find depth on the defensive line? Dave Gettleman has always been someone that likes to stack up those defensive linemen in the early and middle rounds of the draft.
Outside. Your defensive tackles is very thin. Maurice Hurst, it kind of thins out after that. Defensive end, you got Chubb. Broward's kind of up and down, the kid from Ohio State, but he's shown the ability to impact games in the playoffs. Marcus Davenport, you'll be able to get good defensive ends literally through the second round.
We have talked a lot about James Betcher coming in as the new defensive coordinator. He likes to run a hybrid scheme and a lot of fluidity between the linebackers and the safeties. Are there linebackers that you like for them maybe in day two that would really be a good fit?
Oren Burks, a kid to remember from Vanderbilt. A little bit smaller, 6'2", 230 pounds, played some safety at Vanderbilt, moved to outside linebacker. He's a guy that, you know, he's more of a run-and-chase pursuit linebacker. You're not going to use him to blitz, but if you want him to play in space, you want him to run down, you know, the Thomas Brown type of linebacker. I mean, he is that type of guy that you're going to be able to get in the third day of the draft that I think will help as a situational linebacker, also help out on special teams.
How about the corner class? Not a lot of size in the corner class, but a lot of guys between 5'10 and 6'. Are these guys that you think you can play outside in the NFL, or are you going to have to pigeonhole them into the slot a lot of them?
No, I think most of them because, you know, they may be 5'10", 5'11", but they're tough. Josh Jackson, he's a tough player. Colton Davis of Auburn, a very tough player. You'll get some guys in the second round that, you know, they may be 5'10", 5'11", but they play over 6'. None of these guys are shy away from contact. They will mix it up. They'll jam the guys at the line of scrimmage. They'll mix it up throughout the route. So, I mean, the height is more of a mismatch issue, especially, but if you got to see what their arm length is, because if the guy's, you know, 5'10" and he's got 33, 34-inch arms, well, that's going to make up for the 2 inches of height that he doesn't have.
Now, Tony, I have so much respect for you, I'm going to test you with a really, really tough one. Third day, Giants look for somebody who's going to be a dynamic kick returner because they've had trouble returning kicks. Who would that guy be?
If he falls into the third day, Nyheim Hines of North Carolina State.
See, this is why he's the best.
Uh-oh. Make the big bucks, right? He's a hybrid running back, receiver, dynamic kick returner. He's a guy that North Carolina State used all over the field. I do know that the Giants spoke with him. The Giants have some interest in him, as do the Philadelphia Eagles. But he's a guy who will just turn the game around with huge kick returns. I mean, that's his game. The other guy to remember is Quadri Henderson of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
More of a receiver, but a guy who is a game-changing punt returner and kick returner. He's like a fifth round. The thing with Himes is Himes could go third round because you could use him as a running back, as a third down back, toss sweeps, get him the ball in space. You can use him at receiver, and he's a good return specialist. Quadri Henderson is a average receiver who's going to make his money at the next level returning kicks and punts. So Henderson, if he's there late, is another name to remember.
We touched on the O-line class. You said you didn't like the tackle class, and the guard class kind of drops off after that, you know, end of the first round, start of the second round. Dave Gettleman has picked a lot of offensive linemen in the third, fourth round and developed them. Even Andrew Norwell's an undrafted free agent. What guys do you like that maybe some people are sleeping on at O-line that could be a round 3, round 4, round 5 selection that could develop into a player?
Keep an eye on Braden Smith of Auburn if he gets out of the second round. He's a guy who played tackle. He's a guy who played guard, who's supposed to go to the Senior Bowl, didn't go. He is a really, I think, a Gettleman Giants type of offensive lineman, a big, tough, slug-it-out guy. He's got tackle size. He's a smart lineman. He plays to his size. I think he has all the ingredients from, you know, going back to the days of Bill Parcells, those type of offensive linemen that we saw with the Giants.
The Suburbanites.
You know, and Braden Smith, I think, would be an outstanding pick for the Giants if he gets out of round two.
I'm asking this question, but go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
You know who I'm going to ask about. So, Will Hernandez. I love the guy.
Yeah, but he's not going to get out of round one.
He doesn't get out of round one?
I think what's going to happen is the Jacksonville Jaguars could take him late in round one.
Yeah, Tom would love him. You know that.
I'll tell you what. In my mock draft, I actually had the Giants taking Connor Williams of Texas in round two.
Wow, dropping that far, huh?
Well, he was never really expected to go that high. I think that was people were way off on him. Now, the thing with Williams is he played left tackle, but he did an okay job with it. A lot of people project him inside the guard. Came in at 6'5", 33-inch arms. You know, I think they have to interview him. They have to see if he's got that fire. He has the physical skills. He's built like an offensive lineman, NFL offensive lineman, except he's got shorter arms. Does he have the fire? If he has the fire and he's there in round two, that could be a great bargain for the Giants, who could play him at guard, maybe even try him out at left tackle.
Well, there are some people who are even thinking that maybe Quentin Nelson could be a potential top five pick for the Giants in the first round, which would probably preclude them from taking someone like Hernandez later on. In your mind, is there value in doing that? Dave Gettleman said yesterday, hey, if a guard is really that good, he's worth what anyone will take him for and anyone will pay him for.
I think Nelson's going to be a top six pick. I think the Browns could take him at four. I think the Jets could take him at six. I don't think he gets past Tampa Bay at seven. The Giants at two, you know, I like Gettleman, but if the Giants take him at two, that means they're passing up on Saquon Barkley or Bradley Chubb.
Right.
And I grade those two players much higher than Quentin Nelson.
Okay.
Of this group of interior offensive linemen, who has the best chance of getting to the Giants at 34? Billy Price, James Daniels, Isaiah Wynn. You already mentioned Will Hernandez, but I'll throw him into the mix as well. Because to me, that's kind of that 20 to 30 group that I think a lot of teams are going to try to focus on in that end of the first round. There might be a little bit of a run there.
I like Billy Price a lot. I think Billy Price is one of the most underrated interior linemen in this year's draft. I think he is a dynamic center. I think he's a guy that's going to go mid to late first round, will go on to be a multiple Pro Bowl performer. I think he's the best offensive interior lineman to come out of Ohio State since Nick Mangold.
Wow.
To answer your question, that guy would be Isaiah Wynn, but I still think Isaiah Wynn could go late first round. Wynn had three great years of film at Georgia, yet coming into his senior year, he was graded as a street free agent by NFL scouts, which shocked me. Played left tackle at Georgia last year, projects to guard, was great throughout the season. If you watch the national championship game, he went head-to-head with Deshaun Hand and won most of those battles during the national championship game. Alabama, Deshaun Hand's going to be a second-round pick. Same thing at the Senior Bowl. He's more of a mobile guy. He's not the mauler, say, Will Hernandez is. He's not the mauler of Billy Price. But he's a guy, if you want to use his own blocking system, you want him to get out on the second level, you want him to pull across the line of scrimmage and block in motion, he will do a good job. He's a versatile guy. I like that type of offensive lineman who's very good on their feet, whereas, say, Will Hernandez plays in a phone booth, plays in a small area. Isaiah Wynn's got a lot of upside. And he's the guy that, in the second round, could be there for the Giants. I don't think the other guys will.
Okay.
Final question for me, and this question's for Paul. He thinks the Giants might get really good value trading out of the second pick. He wants to try to pick up one of these tackles to help the Giants at the offensive tackle position. You said you don't see a lot of left tackles in this draft.
No.
You talked about Connor Williams already.
Right.
How about Zeus Brown, Mike McGlinchey? Some people really like Colton Miller out of UCLA.
Rankin.
Some people are like Jamarcus Jones out of Ohio State. Martinez Rankin, another guy. Any of these guys do you think could be a starting left tackle at some point that can pass protect against some of these great rushers, the Khalil Mack, the Von Millers, the Marcus Lawrences?
Mike McGlinchey of Notre Dame is the only guy who I think as a rookie could start at left tackle in the league. And I still have my questions about that. He's maybe the surest thing, or the guy with the amount of least downside risk. In my mind, Brown's strictly a right tackle. He's too big. He's too immobile. He can't slide his feet. He did a good job at Oklahoma, where he never basically had a tight end at one side. Martinez Rankins is going to be either a center or a guard. He needs a lot of work. He's a very good athlete. He's got good size. Just doesn't get to seam it between the ears. Now, you said Colton Miller. Colton Miller could be a good selection or consideration for them in round two. The thing with Colton Miller is you're going to may have to redshirt him for a year, because he hasn't really played a lot of football. He's got a great body. Same thing with Brian O'Neill of Pittsburgh, you also mentioned. Mm-hmm. They're very athletic. They got NFL bodies, but they're going to need time. And it's a situation where if you draft either of those guys, I think O'Neill's more of a third-round guy for the Giants. Colton Miller could be a second-round guy. If you start them in September, you may not have Eli Manning on the center in October.
That's not a good idea.
Okay? So, if you
that's not part of the plan.
But the thing about – well, it could be for Dave Gettleman, because he's – this is his first year. So he could say, listen, we're going to draft Colton Miller, and, we're going to develop him, because I'm not really worried about 2018. I'm worried about 2019, 2020, 2021. He's got some time. So if you're looking long-term – and you really feel you got to come out of this draft with a left tackle because the free agency class is garbage, you could take a Colton Miller in round two. You could take a Brian O'Neill in round three. You just have to realize it may take some time before they're NFL ready.
How about the Crosby kid out of Oregon? He's the one guy I did not mention.
Yeah.
Third or second?
Third or fourth.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not big on Crosby. He's solid. He had some moments at the Senior Bowl.
I thought he was pretty good at the Senior Bowl.
He also got moments where he was just getting blown off the ball and getting beaten by the Oklahoma kid. I'm not really big on Crosby. I think he's more of a last day guy.
Tony, great stuff as always, my friend. I know you have Connor Williams of the Giants in round two.
Yep.
How about round one? Who do they pick?
Josh Allen of Wyoming. The reason I say Josh Allen is because I think that the Giants have what Josh Allen needs, time and a good quarterback coach. Allen's got physical skills that some quarterbacks in the league don't have. I mean, he can make throws that quarterbacks in the league do not have. He can make plays with his feet. He's a good kid. I mean, people like him, like his personality. The question is, can you coach him to be accurate? You got to work on his footwork, and he knows he's got to work on it. And I think with Pat Shurmur there, who's had success at the quarterback position, I think it'll be a challenge for Pat Shurmur. But again, I think that it could be Josh Allen because they got the time learning behind Eli Manning. They got the quarterback coach. And Josh Allen, if you hit on him, you talk about a generational quarterback, that's the guy. Granted, as we talked about, there's no guarantees.
Tony, good stuff, my friend.
Thank you, Tony.
Great to see you.
For Tony Pauline's work, make sure you go to draftanalyst.com. We'll be back with Tom Rock from Newsday. We're Giants Talk right after this on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
It's Romeo Aquara. The best thing about the combine was being able to meet all the players I played with and against with in college, and just being surrounded by all these great athletes, trying to take the next step in the professional career, hoping to make it in the NFL, get drafted by a team or sign with a team, whatever the case may be. But just an awesome experience being able to practice and meet the coaches, team owners, GMs, and good luck to all the guys out there participating in the combine this weekend. Enjoy it. It's a long week, but at the same time, you got to enjoy yourself.
He's under pressure and he gets sacked.
Individual goes up.
Snap is good at kick.
On its way to the clock.
Jason Pierre-Paul, JPP.
I think when he plays with leverage, he's as powerful a defensive lineman as today. He does everything well.
Pass intercepted. He threw it by Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown.
You play like him, and we'll go places.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino, and the man you might see behind, like, Pat Shurmur during one of his press conferences this season. That's Tom Rock.
I'm lurking.
Yeah, he is lurking.
I'm a lurker.
And he covers the Giants from Newsday. All right, Tom, we've been heavy on the draft prospects. Let's try to do more Giant-centric stuff here.
Okay.
First things first, biggest takeaway for you from what we heard from both Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur yesterday?
That they haven't made up their mind yet about what they're going to do.
Wide open, right?
Number two pick. Wide open. In fact, I just saw Pat Shurmur in the hallway out there, and I said, I heard some people talking about where you're going to go, and he said, they're lying because we don't even know where we're going to go. So, I think this whole thing is wide open. I think the interesting thing that we learned about yesterday when we talked to those guys was a lot about Davis Webb. And we really don't know too much about him, but we learned that he's been in the facility. He's been shadowing Eli Manning for most of the offseason so far.
And Paul's been shadowing him,
Paul's probably the only guy in the organization, I think, with the CBA who's allowed to talk football with these guys, right? Because Pat Shurmur was saying he has to bite his tongue every time he sees them in the cafeteria.
That's true.
Because he's not allowed.
That's
so
true.
I don't know how.
But he can talk with Eli.
He can talk. Well,
Davis can.
Eli and Davis could talk to each other. Yes,
and that's like having a coach.
They can talk football. Sure, sure.
That's correct.
So there's a lot of weird rules about when you can do these things, and even when the off season program starts in April, they can't pick up a football for the first 2 weeks or whatever. It's all this cockamamie stuff.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that changes when the CBA gets renewed.
I think it will. Yeah. I think it will. Absolutely. And in fact, it's funny because that was the Pat Shurmur's first year in Cleveland. That was the first year they had those rules.
2011.
Right after the lockout in 2011. So he had to kind of adjust to being a head coach and adjust to the new rules at the same time. So I think that was probably one of the things that held him back in Cleveland.
One thing we kind of heard a little bit from with Shurmur and Gettleman about a month or so ago, and we heard again yesterday, is that Eli Apple has a clean slate. This is a former first-round pick who, quite frankly, the team has a lot of investment in, and they also know that the kid can play. Well, is it any real surprise to any of us that they would try to give him another chance to get his career on track?
Well, you don't give up on talent, right? That's what Dave Gettleman told us at his introductory press conference. So he has a clean slate with the front office. He has a clean slate with the coaching staff.
And
does he have a clean slate with the locker room? Right, that's going to be the big thing.
Time will tell.
You know, if he plays well, if he shows up, if he puts his helmet on and goes to work, I think he will. If not, I think there's a lot of people in that locker room that feel the way Landon Collins did at the end of the year. That you know, he's more part of the problem than he is part of the solution. Mm-hmm. So he's got to win those guys over, and the only way to do that is to show up to work and get going, make some plays.
Understandably, most of the talk with Gettleman and Shurmur yesterday was on the draft. Second overall pick, of course. That's you can get a franchise-changing player. But free agency comes first, and it's less than two weeks away. What's your feel for what Gettleman's approach is going to be in free agency? Are they going to be willing to give out a premium contract to a guard or Nate Solder if they like him? How aggressive do you think they're going to be trying to patch up what both guys have said is one of their top focuses, the offensive line?
I think we're going to be very surprised that the Giants don't go after those guys, because if you look at Gettleman's track record, right, and who was the first offensive lineman signing that he talked about at his introductory press conference? Sean O'Hara, right? The guy nobody had heard of. He was kind of lingering in Cleveland. They picked him up. He became a New York Giants legend, right? So I think we're going to find the guys, even the guy Norwell. I mean, he was an undrafted guy. Gettleman weeded him out. And you look at guys like Richie Seibert. You know, those are the Gettleman guys. The fourth-round pick, David Deal. You know, the guys who he sees something in but can get at a value. And I think that's what's going to be. I wouldn't even venture to say who it's going to be, because I don't go that far deep into my knowledge. But I think that's the kind of approach that Dave wants to have. With building this team, is looking under the rocks instead of on top of them.
Yeah, the steals, if you will, because yes. Norwell, everybody knows the guy's an all pro.
Right.
There's no steal there, and you're gonna have to pay a lot to get a lot.
Right.
Unlike, as you mentioned, even Kevin Booth was a very valuable guy for this team.
You look at that. You look at that offensive line, and there really wasn't a lot of guys. I mean, you know, so they invested a lot in Snee, right, with the second pick.
And McKenzie.
McKenzie, right? They signed as a free agent, and even in the second Super Bowl run, you had David Boss, who they brought in as a free agent. But a lot of those guys, you know, they were kind of, you know, cast-offs from other places and guys who worked their way up from the practice squad and things like that, undrafted guys. So I think that's the Gettleman MO when it comes to building the offensive line. He likes to find the things that nobody else finds and then not have to pay an exorbitant amount for them.
One other interesting point that I think a lot of people overlooked from the Shurmur press conference, one of them, I forget which guy said it, that even though Betcher plays a 3-4, it's still a one-gap system. And for fans that don't understand what that means, generally speaking, 3-4 systems are considered two gaps, which means each defensive lineman is responsible for two gaps on defense. They're not trying to penetrate. They're just trying to hold the offensive lineman so the linebackers can make a play. The 4-3 defense is one gap. You focus on one gap. You try to penetrate in that gap and make a play. And as we've seen a lot, 3-4 defenses are kind of taking on that one-gap philosophy, which appears to be what James Betcher is going to do, which means maybe the personnel changes in the front, at least, aren't going to have to be as drastic as some people might have thought when he first got here.
Right, especially not in the middle, because when you look at those guys and you look at a guy like Snacks, you know, when he was able to penetrate and get into the pocket and make that push, I think that was when he was at his best. And he talked all year about wanting to improve his sack numbers, and I think that'll help him, that he's still playing in that kind of a scheme. You look on the outside, then I think that I don't know that it helps the pass rush necessarily, but these guys are going to have to be more versatile, more athletic, and dropping back into coverage.
How do you think they'll use JPP? As the stand-up 3-4 outside linebacker rusher or as the 3-4 defensive end?
I think because of his size, I think he's
Because I think Vernon's going to be the stand-up rusher. I think we kind of know that. But what are they going to do with JP?
I think he's going to be more of a hand-in-the-dirt defensive end, sort of like who was the guy, the big cat that the Jets had for a number of years at their their defensive end.
Yeah, I know who you mean.
I hate it when I can't remember names on the air.
it's okay.
But sort of like that player.
It's been a long couple of days. We're all very tired.
I think he's got the size. I think he's got the mass and the bulk to do that. And I think he's got the athleticism. But I see his athleticism diminishing a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the back, if it's the hand. You know, he just doesn't seem as dynamic as he once was. And I think that this will actually be a better move for him to be there, to be a run stopper, and to be able to pursue to the sideline rather than try and get around the edge.
It's very hard, as we've already discussed, to predict.
Sean Elliott, no.
How Gettleman will look at the outside of free agency. And because, you know, you're right. It's going to cost a lot of money, and he seems to do better with the bargain basement guys. So let me ask you this. Of the Giants' own free agents, which ones do you think have the best chance of returning?
I think Justin Pugh has a good chance of returning. I think it is going to be a high price because of the position. And when you look at the rankings that people put out of who were the premier offensive linemen who were hitting the market, Justin Pugh's name is always up there. He liked Justin's versatility. Yesterday when we spoke to Gettleman, he called him a four-hole player, and he said that that's rare. And I think that helps them because they can then have more flexibility, not only when they take the field in September, but they have flexibility now in the offseason when they're putting together their offensive line. So they can say, how do we look? If we bring in a tackle, then we put Justin at this guard. Or if we put Justin at this tackle, then maybe we can get this guard. You know, it opens up a lot of chess pieces. So I think Justin's he's got some injury issues, obviously, and I don't know that they're going to be able to match or going to want to match the price that he'll get on the open market. But he's the guy I would say that they would probably want to come back.
We have, by the way, a few more minutes with Tom. If you want to get on the line, we can give a couple phone calls with Tom at 201-939-4513.
See, based on price and also the fact that he loves hog mollies,
yes.
Does Gettleman, I thought you might have said DJ Fluker.
I don't know that he's coming back. You know, some of his tweets this week have seemed to indicate that, he's moving on, and he's got a little fire in his belly, and he wants to prove some people wrong. So we'll see how that works out. My assumption is that he will not be, and I think he would fit that situation, but I don't know. It doesn't seem to me that it's going to happen.
Okay. Would you expect any?
I would like to see it happen.
I think he did prove something last year.
I think he added a lot to that offensive line. Yes.
Would you expect anything to happen personnel wise between now and the start of free agency?
Cuts, you mean?
Whatever you think might happen.
Or signings? Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that, from the conversations I've had with Gettleman, it doesn't seem like he's too keen to free up a lot of money. He seems to think that they're in a good spot with the salary cap. There's certainly some moves that they can make to add to that number. But I don't think he's chomping at the bit to increase his cap space. He seems pretty comfortable where they are, which will probably be when the cap comes out about $24-25 million in that area. So he'll have that kind of room, and then they also don't worry too much about the cap because it's just a matter of accounting. You can move money from one column to the other and free up a lot of cap space that way. So I don't think that they're going to make any cuts. One of the things he said was that teams don't give up on their prized players, and they don't let their guys hit the market. And I think if the Giants follow that suit, then I think they could get something done with Justin before he hits the market.
That's not a surprising answer because any of us who know Dave Gettleman know he's not impulsive, he's not a knee jerk reaction kind of guy. He's very thorough. He investigates.
Yes.
He's very patient.
Yes. Yes. And when he came to Carolina, don't forget he was I think $15 or $16 million over the cap.
Right.
So for him to start out here being 20 something million under the cap, I think he sees it as a very good position.
Final question for me: gut feeling. What do the Giants do with that second overall pick?
I think it's Barkley. I think it's Saquon Barkley. I think that they, by saying that they want Eli Manning back and that they want him to start the season as quarterback, you're in a win-now situation. And I don't think that you can say we're going to win now, but our second overall pick we hope doesn't play this year.
Well, and you did ask that question. What did you think of the responses from both Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman when you asked them that exact question?
Yeah, well, they didn't really answer it because that would tip their hand as to what they're going to do. But my sense is that, since they've so much committed to Eli Manning, they need to win now, and they need to win in the next 2 years with Eli Manning if that's their plan, right? So you can't go from that and have this prize, this jewel after the torture of last year is the number two pick, and you can't say, you know what, we're gonna put that in the bank and we're gonna save it for down the road. No, I think you owe it to yourself, you owe it to the franchise, you owe it to the fans to get somebody who can make an immediate impact, who can be exciting, who can be a generational player. Have you met anybody here who doesn't think Saquon Barkley is the most talented player in this draft?
It would be hard to do so.
That's true. Right. And I think we've asked pretty much everyone we've had on, and they said, yeah, look, if the best bet to be a Hall of Fame player of that group, it's Barkley.
Did Dave Brugler have Quentin?
Well, he has Nelson graded as his highest player on his board, but he didn't necessarily think that he's the, you know, with position value.
That's about
included,
as close as anyone's
he's the best player.
Right. But I think Barkley. I think Barkley, you never look back. I think you draft a quarterback, you draft an offensive lineman, you draft, you know, Chubb at defense, you draft, you trade back maybe. All those things you're going to be in for the rest of the next 10 years, you're going to be in the back of your mind saying, well, what could we have done?
Right.
You draft Barkley, you have no regrets. Move forward.
Tom, good stuff. We appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas.
Tom,
thank you, Tom.
From Newsday, Aaron Goldheimer, ESPN Cleveland, joins us next. We'll find out what the Browns are going to do at number one, which will impact the Giants, at number two. We'll be right back.
It's always important to give back to the community simply because without their support, we wouldn't be the Giants. The community always supported the Giants in everything we do, and our fans are always going to be behind us, and you always have to give back because giving back one time may help that little kid be motivated, and they are the future, so we have to give back and motivate younger people to become successful and do positive things in their lives.
One, two, three. Coaches all around me, coaches all around me.
I think we have a huge responsibility with the platform we have to really reach out to people in all walks of life. And, you know, I personally have a passion for kids and dealing with kids.
C-D-E-D.
People want to be around athletes, want to see what we have to say, and I want to be one of the guys that give them something that they can really take.
Good job, good job.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino, straight from Cleveland. Aaron Goldheimer from ESPN Cleveland, morning drive host on Cleveland ESPN Radio. Mr. Hammer, how are you?
Well, we're finally excited about a football something in Cleveland. We couldn't get excited for games, but this is exciting. You got two picks in the top five. You know, we had to come to the combine.
Well, so. And we get a ton of questions about what the Browns are going to do, so we're just going to kind of redirect
sure.
those questions to you. So let's start with this. Any chance that the Browns decide not to select a quarterback with the first overall pick in this draft?
You know, John Dorsey was just on our show this morning, and he doesn't want to close the door on anything.
But of course.
I looked him in the eye, and I said, you're taking a quarterback with the first pick in the draft, aren't you? And I get that sense. I think the Browns will take a quarterback at one. Not only that, John, I think they're going to take Sam Darnold. I think we're realizing as we go through this combine process and then we start to move towards the pro days, and I think the consensus is going to become that Darnold is the best quarterback in this class, and I think that he will be a Cleveland Brown.
How much do you think Hugh Jackson will have to say in this selection? We know he stayed and the previous GM is gone.
Sure. So you lose some credibility in your building when you win one game in 2 years. That 1-31 record is an albatross that hangs around his neck. I tend to think this. I think the Browns are going to get a veteran quarterback in free agency, and they're going to draft a quarterback. They're going to do both. I think he will have some say in the veteran that the Browns acquire. And I think they'll acquire A.J. McCarron from Cincinnati, who Hugh obviously has a history with and worked with. He was the offensive coordinator there. I think the draft pick is John Dorsey's. I think that he came here with this job to have the ability to select a guy. Number one, I think they'll get input not only from Hugh, but they also hired a new offensive coordinator. Todd Haley comes from Pittsburgh to Cleveland, and I think he'll have input as well. But I think this decision about the number one pick and the quarterback really rests with John Dorsey. And if they were to disagree, I think Dorsey carries more weight with ownership at this point.
Okay. All right, let's jump to the fourth overall pick. Any chance that they either trade up or down from that fourth pick? Like, you guys have so many extra picks in the second and third rounds. If they really like Saquon Barkley, could you see them wanting to move up a couple spots to get him, or do you think they stay put at four?
No, I think Dorsey has talked about the depth of this draft, and I think he doesn't want to use extra picks as collateral to move up. That also told me when he mentioned that he sees other running backs in this class other than Saquon Barkley as maybe not as good, but in the conversation.
Close enough.
With, you know, I think they like Darius Geis, who's the running back from LSU. I think they like Sonny Michel, who's the running back from Georgia. There are a lot of names on that list that could become impact players. And while Leonard Fournette was an impact player for the Jaguars in 2017, so was Alvin Kamara for the Saints, who was not a first-round pick.
Right.
So I think you can acquire a good player at that position in the later rounds. I'd be surprised if Saquon Barkley ended up in Cleveland, actually.
Now, I'm not going to say this is going to happen because, quite frankly, I don't think so. But I want your gut feel. Would they take trade offers for that number one? How likely would it be that they could move out of it?
I think they would take offers, but, I mean, they would really have to blow the Browns' doors off for
them to
trade.
They've already done it twice before. You can't do it again.
So is Sam Darnold going to go somewhere and become a franchise quarterback, and Browns fans are going to have to watch that like they do with Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson? I don't think it's a really plausible scenario. But, you know, Dorsey is a GM, so he's not going to go up at that podium at the Combine and say, we're not going to take calls. I mean, I'm sure they will take calls. The question is whether or not they really answer and listen. I think you'd really have to come up with something. Let me put it this way. I think a proven veteran winner would have to be coming back to Cleveland as a quarterback in order for them to trade the number one pick. If the Colts wanted to talk about Andrew Luck, that might be a conversation that could happen. If you're talking about future draft picks, I don't think that's happening.
See, the only reason I even bring it up is because they do have the four also, which teams in the number one spot never have a second pick within arm's length.
Sure, and it's a good point, but I think the Browns like to be in the pole position to pick the quarterback that they think is the best guy. They don't want to end up with the second-best quarterback or the third-best quarterback.
Well, they got Kaiser last year who was not the number one rated quarterback.
And you know, I don't – fans in Cleveland sort of have this belief like, oh, we'll just take the leftover quarterback at four. No. Identify the best guy and pick him at number one, and I think that's what the Browns are going
to
do.
Final question. You talked to Dorsey today. What's your feel for what their pick at four would be? Do they like Chubb? Do they like Fitzpatrick? How do they analyze the other guys at the top of this draft, or maybe even a Quentin Nelson?
I think that offensive line is out, despite the fact that Joe Thomas might retire in the next week. That's something to keep an eye on. I think the defense could really be an option. I think they like Minkah Fitzpatrick. I think they like his versatility. I think they want to give Greg Williams another toy to play with, along with Myles Garrett. But I would keep an eye on Bradley Chubb also because, you know, as the Giants have learned over the years, you can't have too many good pass rushers. And when you have a bunch of really good ones, it tends to really help you win.
Sure.
And if you have Garrett and Emmanuel Ogba, who are proven already with Cleveland, and you add Bradley Chubb to that mix, you're building a little impressive stable of guys to get after the quarterback. All of a sudden, Ben Roethlisberger might not be having so much fun playing the Browns if you put that stable of guys up against him.
Hammer, appreciate the time.
Love you guys.
Thanks, man.
And hopefully next year, the most exciting part of your football season won't be the combine.
We're talking to us.
That's what we're leaning towards. We're moving in that direction.
We'll wrap up the show with John Ledyard from NDT Scouting right after this. We'll be right back.
I think it's very important to give back to the community.
Nice to meet you. How you doing, guys?
Hey.
Ready for some football?
I think the Giants organization does a great job.
How you doing, buddy? Good?
Yeah.
Glad to see you out here, man.
I try to be a part of that. I try to help out as much as I can just for the community.
Smile, guys.
I feel like especially the younger generation, they're going to be the next up. So to start them off early and be able to give back to them and show them the way, it's just setting us up for the future.
Have a Merry Christmas. You guys get a gift bag?
Yeah.
You got a gift card in there and then get some games.
It's really important for us to continue to do that.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino. You might recognize him for our last two Combine shows, and he joined us on the phone a few weeks ago as well to preview the Senior Bowl. That's John Ledyard. He's from NDT Scouting. John, how's the Combine treating you so far?
It's going well so far. I just got in a little bit ago, so I came in early this morning and not on much sleep right now, but that's part of the fun of the process, right? You get here and you just kind of get swept up by everything else, and sleep becomes an afterthought. Almost.
Who are you most excited to see do some of the drills this week that you think these guys can really help themselves if they perform well?
Yeah, I've been thinking about the running back group today, and I really want to see guys. We know Saquon Barkley is going to be a freak, right? I mean, but I think guys like Darius Geis, he played hurt a lot this year, and I think he has a lot of athleticism to show people that was on display 2 years ago. And this year, it was on display, but it was a little bit more limited. So I think he's a guy. I think Sony Michel from Georgia has a shot to be a first-round pick, you know, just to continue to think about the running back prospects. I think he tests at a really high level. He shows on film he has the traits and the abilities to be a versatile weapon, both in the passing game, which Georgia didn't use him a ton in, largely because they had DeAndre Swift, they had other guys. But when he did get to run routes, when he did get to catch the football, really impressive stuff. Those are two guys that I think should be vaulted up into that first-round conversation. I know team need at running back might be a thing, but
how about Jones from USC?
Yeah, he's also another guy that I think is definitely going to test well. A very explosive kid. Clearly has the long speed, in my opinion. What he's got to show in the drills and stuff, can he catch the football? That's going to be a big thing. Can he talk through teams on the whiteboard that he knows how to pass protect and do things like that? Assignment-wise, he did some good things, but the size is going to be a concern.
How about the 195 that he weighed in at? Is that a concern?
I think it is a little bit of a concern, because if you look at a guy like, I think he has a slighter frame, and even though I think most of the time on film he knew where to be in pass protection, the concern I had with him was this was a guy that may not have the size to be able to get the job done in the NFL. That's a big deal, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Nwosu and Leonard, to me, may be second-day linebacker picks for the Giants. How would you see them fitting for them? Because, quite frankly, I don't see any way the Giants are going to take a linebacker at number two overall. Yep. There's just not value there. But they do need to fortify that position.
Right. It's interesting because we've talked about linebackers for a long time with the Giants, and it wasn't a position that they've really prioritized. But now new regime comes in. You have James Betcher worked with, you know, a first-round picks at linebacker.
Yeah.
Deion Buchanan and Hassan
Redick. He's going to want one.
He's going to want one. And Gettleman, we know Gettleman loves linebackers. He had Keekly and Thomas Davis, and he still drafted Shaq Thompson in the first round. This is going to be a priority for the Giants, I think. If the regime it's in place makes sense, and I think the guys you mentioned, definitely guys that they're going to want guys that can run and can be athletic. If Gettleman's profile from the past is an indication of how they're going to proceed moving forward, he's going to want guys that can run. To me, that looks like Leonard, and that looks like Nwosu on tape. I think both of those guys are possibility. Another guy, maybe Fred Warner from BYU, kid that played like a slot overhang role at BYU, very athletic, can move, has a lot of great range and coverage, 7 interceptions, 13 passes defense during his time at BYU. Another guy that fits the profile, in my opinion.
Does he get into day two, you think, Warner, or you think he could be a fourth-round pick?
I really think he could get into day two if he tests how I hope he will, and there hasn't been a lot of buzz around him, but here's the thing. He played like that 3-4 outside linebacker, but never rushed the passer, so it was a weird role, and he was in coverage a ton. He played like basically a big slot, but he's 6'3", 235. This guy's going to play linebacker. He moved off the ball in the combine in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. Looked great, reading his keys, processing, coming forward, attacking guards. I think that, combined with the interview process, which he's going to excel at, combined with athletic testing and then his size, I think somebody's going to like him on day two.
How about Toure, the pass rusher from Rutgers, who missed all 16 with the shoulder injuries, couldn't play. He played basketball, not a lot of football background. Right. Undersized, it seems like he could fit as a 3-4 outside linebacker, pass rusher type. Do you think he's going to test out the house this weekend? Do you think he's going to help himself a lot?
I think he's going to impress. I really do. I think that Ture's a guy that there was questions. The production, the injuries, all that stuff's going to be a question. His medicals are huge here. He's had shoulder issues. But if you watched him in Mobile and you watched him on tape, you saw a guy that can tilt the edge in a similar fashion a lot of ways to Yannick Ngakoue for the Jaguars. I think they have similar pass rush abilities. The question with Ture, it was inconsistent, and he was a weak run defender at times on tape. The all-around game may be a concern, but I think the testing, if the medicals are good, are going to convince somebody, pass rushers go at a premium. You know, these guys are valuable. We know this. So I think in his size, of maybe ability to put his hand down, as well as play from a two-point stance, I think that's going to be something teams really value on day two.
In talking about what Betra does with his defense, we've been talking to a lot of people these first couple of days about how the safeties play pseudo linebacker. He's very fluid with his back seven.
And he likes safeties to play corner, too, like he does. Matthew. Yeah.
And they'll play slots sometimes.
Sure. Absolutely.
And we get the impression that's not much in the safety class this year. Do you share that?
I think, yes, generally speaking. I think you can get guys that can start for your team. The real high-value guys in years past have been the single high guys, the guys that have ball skills, can move, can play that single high role, can cover a lot of ground with range, can make up for things on the back end. I don't see a ton of guys that fit that profile necessarily, but there's guys that can roll down, can play in the box. There's guys who can play that pseudo-linebacker role. There's a couple good man-cover safeties. Ronnie Harrison's going to test more athletically, I think, this week than people give him credit for. I don't know if he's as big as people. I think the perception around him will shift. He's more athletic with traits to become a pretty good cover guy in the slot against bigger prospects, bigger receivers. But I think that he may not be the pseudo linebacker size that people want him to be too. So He's a guy, I mean, you know, earlier in the draft, guys like Derwin James, Minkah Fitzpatrick have that versatility.
Yeah.
Then later on, when you look at guys that could be there on day two, Jesse Bates is another guy from Wake Forest that's played a little bit in the slot. He also has some single high ability, I think. His question is going to be the size and the weight. So they're interesting prospects, but generally speaking, I think you're right. There's not the high value, tons of ball skills, tons of interceptions type guys that will play single high and go really high because of it.
James Betcher also likes to play a lot of man. Look, he did it with the Cardinals and Patrick Peterson and the guys there. What guys do you like rounds 3, 4, maybe even round 2? Because the Giants have some veteran corners. They might want to stack it up with some young guys behind them. Who do you like from this class that can really play some tight man, bump and run coverage in the middle rounds of this draft?
I think a middle-round guy that's really interesting is Isaac Yiadom from Boston College. You know, there's some really interesting things on his tape. Both the Boston College corners are Cameron Moore and Isaac Yiadom. Yiadom was probably, honestly, other than maybe MJ Stewart, he might have been the best cornerback that was in Mobile. He flashes ball skills on tape. I wish he finished a little bit better in the air, but he's got the length. He's got the size teams want. He's got to be able to run well this week. That's the big question mark he's got to check off. But he's very physical, bump and run coverage. I think he fits a lot of the things they could be looking for. There's a lot of those guys in the middle rounds. Christian Campbell from Penn State might be a day three guy. He's got developmental skills. The Cardinals, when Betcher was there, they took some of the more of the developmental types. Remember Brandon Williams in like the third round or what was it? So they're not afraid of those guys. That may not be Betcher's MO. That may not be Gettleman's MO, although he drafted some more raw corners too when he was at Carolina. So that may be their prototype is let's get a bigger, longer guy who has the traits that we want and let's teach him to play corner.
There aren't a lot of the bigger, longer guys. A lot of these corners this year are 5'11".
No. Right. I mean, there's some guys in this class that are up there. There's a couple guys that are in day three, I think, that could be up there in terms of size. But you're right. A lot of them, definitely in the smaller end, guys with some versatility, though. Inside, outside, they like that. I mean, they've used that in the past. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie's played inside, outside. So they've had some guys like that. And obviously, Betcher valued versatility when he was in Arizona. So, again, that could be another trait they look for is versatility.
Let me build off of that. John knows in the past, I really had an aversion to 3-4 tweeners on the outside.
Yep.
You know, that just doesn't go for me too well. But the fact is, because of Betcher's fluid type of defense, that's the kind of guy they're probably going to be looking to get at some point in this draft. Who would you see as possible second-day guys who are more maybe pass rush edge linebackers in that regard as opposed to maybe some of the cover guys and the run stoppers?
Yeah. I think Jeff Holland from Auburn is an interesting guy. He played from a two-point stance a good bit at Auburn, showed the ability to rush the passer, to get after the passer a little bit. He is a guy that probably won't wow at the testing, but good hands at the top of the arc. He has a pass rush plan. Some of the ways that he rushed the passer actually remind me of Carl Lawson. He clearly picked up some things from his teammate before Lawson left. Lawson came to the NFL, didn't have the greatest traits, but had enough, and it translated right away. And he was one of the best pass rushers in the league as a rookie. And I think Holland isn't that explosive as Lawson was. I think Lawson had a better first step, but I see some of the same hand movements, some of the same ideas at the top of the arc, a little stutter step, being able to win the edge and set up a soft corner for yourself. He's a guy I would keep my eye on day two for sure.
John, final question. We're getting predictions from everybody, and you have the right to change your opinion between now and the draft. We'll have you back on. First and second round pick for the Giants.
First and second round pick.
And by the way, his record, by the way, is spectacular.
It really is.
Especially in later rounds. So pay attention to what this guy says.
Now the pressure's on.
He had Gallman and you had B.J. Goodson.
I know.
Right?
I did.
Two guys?
Goodson,
yes.
Yeah. And then I think Avery Moss maybe, too.
He might have had Avery Moss.
That's
a good point.
Yeah. So the day three guys. Day one guys. If I had to guess right now, I think if I'm just guessing, I think the Browns go with Sam Darnold. If the Giants stay put, it's just going to be hard. It's hard for me to say they pass up on a franchise quarterback. To me, I think Josh Rosen's the best quarterback in the draft. I think he makes the most sense. Second-round pick, honestly, I think it's going to be a linebacker. I think that that could be a direction that they go. There are some things to work out with that secondary. I think you could see a linebacker coming to play.
Van Der Esch?
A guy like Van Der Esch. A guy like Rashawn Evans makes a lot of sense, I think, if both of them are there. Now I have to get past the Saints and Steelers at the end, but I think that those are some names that could be on the board for the Giants.
John, great. Good stuff. We appreciate
awesome.
It.
Thank you,
John. Folks, thanks for joining us today on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We got running backs and offensive linemen talking. We got to go set up. So we're going to head over there, and we'll have that for you on Big Blue Kickoff Live tomorrow and on Giants.com with the two-minute drill later on today. For Paul Dottino, John Ledyard, and our entire slew of guests, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow from Indy for another two-hour edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Everybody have a great day.